Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. All right, hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. Pumps, I got one of my buddies on here tonight. This is UFC fighter Tim Elliott. And Tim, man, thanks for being with me.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. Good to see you.
Yeah. So a little bit about Tim. Let me start with Tim and I, our history a little bit. So I actually had the privilege of kind of coaching him at some wrestling camps when he was younger. We ended up being clinicians at the camps together and teaching and coaching for years at wrestling camps, working out together many times. And Tim was a college national champion. He wrestled for Joe Renfro, who's kind of a legend. We'll probably talk about Joe later. And then a multi-time All-American, long story short, ends up making it to the UFC, has fought for a title, currently, you know, fights in the UFC. Long history there. And Tim is an all-around great dude, man. And plus, he's probably one of the most high energy and just hardest working people I've ever met in my life. So, you know, Tim, I appreciate you, man.
Man, thanks for having me. Been lucky in the sense that I always had a good group of coaches, no matter what I've been doing, wrestling, MMA, I've always been blessed with really good coaches. So it's not a, you know, there's a lot of hard work involved too, but I've also been blessed in that sense in the coaching aspect.
Yeah. So having great coaches is huge, man. And then having athletes to work hard as a coach is a big blessing too. So, well, let's kind of start for those who don't know you, man, your background, you know, where you grew up, a little bit of your family dynamics. And then when did you get into wrestling?
Grew up in Wichita, Kansas with my father, John Elliott. When I first moved in with him, I think it was about third or fourth grade. So I didn't really go to much school before that. I bounced around a lot with my mother. Finally got to go live with my father around the third or fourth grade. I tried baseball and soccer and football, and he really wanted me to be a basketball player because that's what he did whenever he was younger. But man, I just, no coordination, terrible, no height, couldn't hardly jump. So I tried baseball forever. I wasn't very good at that, and track for a while. And I really liked pole vaulting. I was fairly good at that, but wrestling was the only thing that I wasn't horrible at. So that's what I stuck with, and I put everything into that. I think I started wrestling in the fifth grade, and in between fifth and sixth grade I started wrestling, and was lucky enough and unlucky enough at the same time to be around a bunch of really good wrestlers at that time. So it was good in the sense that I had good guys to go with, but bad because I was kind of older already. And man, these guys were just tearing me up. Dave Anderson, Josh Baldridge, Joe Cornejo, Bubba Ludlow, Johnny Christman, just these guys that would just kill me. Josh Baldridge, four-time state champion. So like I was like the rest round forever, and it took all the way until I was a freshman in high school before I won any matches really. So that's kind of where I got my start. But even at that time, it wasn't really wrestling. I had to fight those guys because they were all so much better than me at that time. So that's kind of how I went from wrestling into MMA.
Yeah. So, you know, I love hearing that, man. I mean, so many wrestlers, well, I guess, you know, it varies, but a lot of highly successful wrestlers started young. And, you know, so you started late, which, like you said, there was a battle there, but you end up being a state champion, you end up going to college, being a national champion. And, you know, I mentioned them all ago, but so you went to Labette, you and I both, you know, wrestled Labette. You know, we're from that mindset and that breed that happens in that room. And you got to wrestle for Joe Renfro. Tell me a little bit about that.
It was a different dynamic. My dad was kind of always a hard ass, which was, you know, well-deserved. Like he was just on me to do something. It didn't matter what it was. I had to do something to occupy my time. I couldn't just hang out. So, going to Renfro was a little bit scary. He was so intense, and like I'd kind of gotten in a little bit of trouble graduating from high school. And Mike Church was my assistant coach, and he had went to Labette as well. And he kind of put me in the car and was like, "Hey, you're going to go meet this guy and talk with this guy." And my dad went up there and Church went up there, and boy, next thing you know, these guys are all like intense and talking about what I'm going to do and all this shit. And I'm just sitting back like, oh my God, just like, I just got out of juvie and like was lucky I wasn't 18 yet. And these guys are talking about all this crazy stuff. And then, man, sure enough, I wrestled a year under my first year there. I should have been a national champion. I wrestled the guy that ended up being a national champ as a freshman. I can't remember what match it was, but we were tied up going into the third. Renfro wanted me to pick neutral. I wanted to pick bottom. The kid was a really good rider. Coach Renfro told me no. I said, yes, I want to pick bottom. And I never argued against him, but he said no. I said, yes, I want bottom. I said, he can't ride me, coach. And Joe said, all right. He rode me. I lost by riding time. That kid went on to win a national title. And afterwards, we were hanging out, drinking at the, you know, with just hanging out with the team. And I talked to him a little bit. And then the next year, I think, actually, it was a tournament. And I talked to him, and I apologized for not listening to him. And he said, I take blame for that 100% because I knew you were too stupid to make your own decision, and I let you do it anyway. So that's my fault. And that's just the kind of coach that he was. He's such a good coach that even at that time, like, he let me make my own decision. And he knew it was wrong, and he still let me do it. And then later told me that he knew that it was his fault, that he could have overridden my decision. Like, I wouldn't have had any choice if he would have really stepped up and said something, and I would have listened to him. But he believed in me at that point, and he shouldn't have, because he knew what he was doing, and I knew that he knew what he was doing. And after that, I never questioned him again. If he would have told me, hey, I need you to run into traffic, it's going to make you win a national title, I would have closed my eyes and took off. He's that kind of coach. So he just brings the best out of you, and you know that. You've worked with him for longer than I have.
Yeah, so tell me, because I think it's a hilarious story, but, you know, you win nationals the next year, and you'd made a deal with them that you'd get to slug them. So, yeah, tell me about that, because I think it's hilarious.
I think it was kind of the same time when I told him something about, after he said that I was too stupid to make my own decision, I said something about hitting him, and he said the only way that I could hit him was if I won a national title. So the next year, I didn't say anything. I went through, I won a national title. Everybody runs and jumps in their coach's arms and gives him a big hug. And I start running over to Renfro, and he puts his arms out. And man, I hit him once and I hit him twice. And after the second punch, he bear hugged me to my back. And then I said you could hit me once, you something, something, you know, I can't remember exactly. But then, you know, that was it. But I kept my word, and I remembered that. And like, it was one of the best moments of my life and something I'll never forget. And it wasn't out of anger or anything or spite. It was, that was our hug. And if you know Joe Renfro and our relationship, like, we're different people, and we didn't always see eye to eye or get along, but we had that in common that, you know, it didn't matter who was the better wrestler. All you had to do was have one good tournament. And that kid was way better than me whenever I wrestled, but it didn't matter. Coach Renfro thought I was going to win. As long as we still had some time left, we thought that I was going to win. And man, that made me think that I could beat anybody.
Yeah. So, and that, I mean, for me, knowing both you guys very well, it epitomizes the relationship and, you know, a lot about who you guys are. I think it's awesome too. And that's a bond that I think anybody that's had a great bond with their coach understands that sometimes there's a connection there that maybe the outside world doesn't know or doesn't get to see, you know, but like you said, it really builds confidence in your mind that you can go out and you can do great things.
Well, and that's what translated over to MMA. Like for me, like going into a fight, even when I went into Demetrius Johnson, like it was so easy going into that fight because everybody knew that I was going to lose. I was already beat. So it was just like my national title going in with that Ray Stevens. He had won it the year before at 133s, came down to flyweight, lost to me. He won it two times after that. He was a three-time national champion and second place to me. So like I was supposed to lose that match, and the Demetrius Johnson fight was even easier. Everybody already thought I was going to win. I was 1,000-1 underdog or something. I put a bunch of money on myself just because the odds were so crazy. And like, there was no pressure on me at all. All I had to do was go out there and not get knocked out. So that carrying over with Joe Renfro, like just having that belief in me and making me believe like, hey, all you got to do is have 25 good minutes. That's it. 25 good minutes and you can be the champion of the world. Like, you don't have to be the best guy. You don't even have to be the top five best guy. All you got to do is have one good fight one night and you can be a world champion. And I had that opportunity. I didn't get it, obviously, but you know, luckily I'm still in the UFC. I'm still working for that. And I still believe that.
Yeah. Now, how did you make the transition? Like, what was it when you got done wrestling in college that said, like, I want to go into MMA and not just like go and have a couple fights, but like, I think I really want to do this.
Man, I did. I have 9 years of college. I have almost three degrees. I have two bachelor's degrees. I could have a master's or a doctorate by now. I had a bunch of different things that I thought I wanted to do, and I just couldn't work for somebody. I went to these internships and did these like job prepping things after college, and nothing was interesting to me at all. And my wrestling style was never really that athletic or really good for wrestling. I was fighting in those matches, and I would like frustrate guys that were good wrestlers because I would do shit that wasn't real wrestling, and I could get in guys' heads and I would win that way. But fighting was an easy transition. I wasn't taking really good wrestling shots anyway, and my wrestling stance wasn't really good anyway. I kind of had a Greco stance and let guys get in on my legs. But then I thought, man, I really enjoyed practicing fighting and jiu-jitsu. And then I got my first amateur fight, my only amateur fight. I got paid for that, which I thought was a pro fight, but turned up on my amateur record. I got $800 or $900 to win a fight in 30 seconds. And I was like, oh man, this is something I can do for money. And I did it, started out with a bad record and worked at it forever and didn't make any money. And then, but just here in the last couple of years, I finally started to make enough money to support my family and buy a house, and things are looking up. But it's been a long up and down road. And you know, it's not a, I mean, you know how it is with wrestling and teaching, and it's not always financially as appealing as what it is, as gratifying as it is in, just in life. You know what I mean? Like doing good and winning and helping other people. It doesn't always pay that well, but you know, it pays in other ways. So luckily now it's actually paying financially. So the bills are getting paid with just fighting.
Yeah. Which is phenomenal. And I know that you are known for your work ethic. You're known for just, I mean, you have this gas tank that's crazy, and you know, you're one of the few guys. I mean, I'm known for having a pretty good gas tank and being able to work hard. And you know, for those listening, I mean, we'd be at wrestling camp and Tim walks in, you know, on breaks in between and be like, coach, put me through the hardest workout you can think of. And we would just go through the hardest workouts, you know, and you're one of those people to just like eat it up. Now that work ethic that you have, I think that came from wrestling and maybe you're growing up or whatever, but tell me, because a lot of people don't know that fighters don't make a lot of money. I mean, they don't understand that journey unless you're in that world, right? A lot of people just, even if somebody makes it to the UFC, they're like, oh man, those guys are rich. So the work ethic, the grind, the ability, like, how did that all play into you going years of not making a lot of money, but having to stick with it and persevere?
Man, it helped a lot. Like with just having a good, oh,
it's all good.
Sorry, I got a call. It helped a lot with having good family and support, friend system. Like I started my pro career out with 0 wins, 2 losses and 1 draw. So I hadn't won a fight in 4 fights. And, I just, all the guys that I was around were winning fights. And it wasn't that I was taking bad fights. I just, nothing was organized. The hard work that I was putting into wrestling was still going into fighting, but it wasn't being organized to like find a funnel to win. Like in wrestling, you have a funnel. Like, I'm going to try these few things to get this takedown, to get on top, to work this. If that doesn't work, I'm going to go on to this. But you have a funnel of like a set way of how you want to win and a plan. And everything was just so scattered for me. And wrestling, it's okay to be scattered because, I mean, you can make up for it in other ways. Guys aren't punching you and kicking you in the head. So it was a long road. I stayed in college forever. That helped. I was getting student loans even after I was done wrestling. I was student assisting, so I was getting pretty much paid my way through those years where I wasn't making any money with student loans. I never got a job afterwards with my degrees, but I'm using my money that I won through fighting to pay those student loans off. So you know, even though the system, I didn't do it exactly like most people do with college, it worked out well for me. I've got a couple degrees and made a lot of good friends and wrestled and had some of the best times of my life and never really had to pay. I used student loan money to pay for all that. And then after my first few fights, I paid all my student loans off, and it just worked out really in my favor. I never, 33 years old, I've never had a regular job. I never made a regular paycheck. I never like paid a regular taxes. I have to like figure all my stuff out at the end of the year, which is a huge hassle, but it's really worked out well, you know, for the way that I've done things. And now I have a daughter and I get to spend all my time with her and don't have to go to a job and listen to a boss that I hate. It's been awesome.
Yeah. Now tell me about once you got signed to the UFC, and I know that journey has been a little bit up and down. Tell me about that, your UFC journey.
Man, my first fight in, and I knew the only way I was going to get in. I had a 9-fight win streak, fought Jens Pulver, man. And he made my career, that guy's a legend. And I got a lucky shot, knocked Jens Pulver out. My next fight, same thing. I had a tough opponent. My first fight at 125, I spinning back kick, dropped the guy right into a Dars, had a 20-second finish right to there. Nobody wanted to fight John Dotson. He had just knocked out TJ Dillashaw at 135 in the Ultimate Fighter, was coming down to flyweight for the first time. So I took that fight on 6 days' notice. I flew from San Francisco to Kansas City. I trained for 3 days. Then James and I flew to New Jersey. I fought John Dotson, number one guy in the world. I think I made 6,000 and 6,000, but I lost. So I only made $6,000. And then I had to pay for my own medicals afterwards. So I think I walked away for a number one fight in the world with $3,200 or something. So, but which for me was huge, because that was 5 times what I'd made anywhere else. But it was the same thing. It's one of those deals where nobody wanted to take that fight, but you have to take the opportunities when they come, and that's what was offered. And really, I got lucky. That fight kind of paved the way. I didn't win, but it was really exciting, and that kind of set me up for getting bonus money now.
Yeah, I think I yelled at the TV quite a bit during that fight. I was watching your fights and getting all excited and being in the moment with you, man, whenever you're out there scrapping. So, yeah, nothing better than watching.
What's that?
There's nothing better than watching people you know fight, man.
Especially. Oh man, for me that's almost harder than fighting sometimes. Is like Kraus is going on the 17th. He's in Abu Dhabi on Fight Island. Like I hate that I can't be there with him, but he's such a good coach. Even I know he would like take me out there with him, but he knows Gina's here. She's going down to 125 for the first time, and I got a fight scheduled now, so He's a good enough coach, even though he needs help out there. He wouldn't take none of his guys with him, Grant Dawson or any of us, because they might have a short notice fight or something. So he's like, you guys got to stay there. He didn't say it, but I know exactly what his thought process is. He's like, I'm not bringing you guys out here and ruining any opportunities for you guys. So he's out there pretty much by himself, took the fight on 2-3 days notice, week notice, whatever. It didn't matter. But yeah, it's hard to watch those guys for me. Like it's so nerve wracking, especially knowing like James is out there by himself, going to have to make weight, fight, do all that without his regular crew there. So it's nerve wracking.
Yeah. Whenever you're coaching, man, I mean, whether it's wrestling or, you know, I corner a lot of MMA fights, I mean, you literally can't get out there and you want it for your athletes so bad. So it's super nerve wracking. So talking.
Coaching is probably worse. You see those guys, even coaches that take care of themselves, man, it ages you seeing guys you love go out there and give it their all and practice and heart. And then they go out there and lose to somebody that they're better than or vice versa. It's just, either way, it doesn't matter how it happens. It's heart wrenching for somebody, especially a coach.
Yeah. You know, my dad told me when I very first started coaching, he said, you're going to be more tired on Sunday than you were whenever you were wrestling. And I'm like, whatever. And then I go out, coach my first tournament, and Sunday, you know, didn't have a drink. I mean, I don't even drink. And on Sunday, it felt like I had a hangover. Yeah. Adrenaline highs and lows all day long, you know.
Well, and just people don't realize how taxing just screaming at somebody is. But yeah. Go scream as hard as you can for 3.5 minutes. Like, it's tiring. And then do that for 20, 30 times.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you talked about James and a couple guys from your gym. You know, I interviewed James a couple weeks ago. Glory is one of the best gyms in the nation. You guys have really just solidified everything about it. Tell me a little bit about James, your teammates. And really like what I'm looking, I mean, you guys just have this attitude at Glory. Like you will take a fight on a week notice. you guys will, you, everybody has a super unique style, and it's almost like you guys embrace that style and really develop on, you know, your personalized systems. So just kind of give me some thoughts on Glory and James and the whole deal.
Well, I was with Glory and James before it was any of that. It was, you know, none of us were in the UFC. I was actually the first guy out of James's gym to make it to the UFC. It was Grindhouse at that time. But, man, it's different now. These, like, I left for a while and came back. And, like, when I first came back, I had these Isaac Dolgarian and these, like, Mikey England and these other Jeff Molina. And then several guys that were here when I was here that didn't leave. And then I came back from being in the UFC and training in Vegas. And, like, these dudes are thrashing me. And I feel like Isaac is a two-fight amateur. And, like, he was just rubbing my – like, granted, I just drove, like, 20 hours across – country, but then I'm not even trying to cut myself any credit, because I knew at that point, I was like, okay, I got to get up here and get this. And these aren't guys that are coming here to train because they love Kansas City or because it's a cool place and the weather's great. They're coming here as young guys, and James is sending these guys to the UFC, Grant Dawson. These guys are homegrown. And now I come back and these other guys are starting to come here. Like, I have a guy here staying at my house right now, Derek Minner. He came and trained, did the same regimen I did. We both took short notice fights. Derek came here, did 2 weeks, went out to Vegas, got a really quick finish. I did 2 weeks, went to Abu Dhabi, James and I, and got my last finish. So, and I think what it is, it's not the hardness of training. It's how he trains. Everything is a system. There's a reason for everything. They have places they're really good and things they really do well. And then they find out what you're good at. And then everything that they train you to do at that point is to funnel you to where you're best. And it's just organization of everything. And that's what I was really lacking up. Because like you said, heart and training hard, cardio, that shit I can do, that's on me. But the organization of my training and the finding the ways to win, that funneling it down to my highest probability, my highest chances of winning, and figuring that out, that's the kind of coach James is. And I didn't even know that I was missing that until I got here and he told me, and now I see it. And now that's not happening. Those guys that were rubbing my face in the mat, now it's not happening like that anymore.
Yeah. I love that, man. Cause I love the,
he's growing these guys here. Like, people aren't coming to Kansas City for the weather. They come here for Glory MMA. Hi, baby.
Go get my little lunchbox that's
out of the car. Yeah. I want you to get out of here though and shut the door. If you need something, ask Gina. Okay. Thank you.
I love it, man. I'm a family man, got four kids myself. So, you know, for those who'll be listening on the podcast, that's, you know, Tim's daughter coming in there. So, which is great.
I'm ready for more. I wish I had four.
Yeah. It's a blessing and it's exhausting at the same time, but it's good. So now James is a very smart guy. He's highly technical and I love it, because that's exactly how I coach wrestling. We systemize, we figure out what kids are good at, and then we funnel everything toward that. I don't need them to learn everything in the world. We create, right, put them in positions where they're going to be best and be able to win. So now I got to ask you, because you've been able to travel, experience some great things. What is probably your favorite overall UFC experience, whether it was you fighting or, I mean, just trip and everything? What was the best one?
Man, I've had so many really great ones with Krause in the very beginning. With the John Dodson fight, it was so great because, like, we didn't have any guys in the UFC at that time. And it was like him and I, like, he was a lot bigger than me, but he had what I needed and I had what he needed. And we were just so good for each other. So that was great. The Ultimate Fighter winning that at the time, I didn't like it. But afterwards, you know, it's been a great experience now at this point. And then, you know, obviously getting to fight Demetrius Johnson for a world title is really great. But probably the very best time that I've had and the best experience for me was just here recently. I got to go to Fight Island with Grant Dawson and James Krause and my fiance Gina Mazzani. And we flew first class on a chartered private jet, had really, really nice accommodations out there. I was quarantined on an island with, like, race cars going around this little track the whole entire time for a couple of days, and then, like, getting tested pretty rapidly. But after, like, making weight and then winning and both our guys winning and all of us cornering each other and just kind of helping each other get through that, it ended up just being like a really special trip. That's why I'm jealous. James is out there in Fight Island right now. I'm like, I wish I could just be there with him. Like, not for any other reason, but just to carry his shit around and, you know, make sure he had all his drinks and everything, because it was such a good experience to see. Like, I don't know. It's real fight life when you're out there sequestered on an island, 25 miles from anywhere in the desert on the ocean on a Formula One track. It's surreal. And it's easy to get into fight mode when you're like that. When I was fighting in Vegas, I lived there. So like, it was like going to practice almost. So it was hard to really get into fight mode. And I think that's one of the best things about being here in Kansas City is I can, everywhere I go, I feel like I can be in fight mode. But probably that Abu Dhabi trip, man, it was something special.
Yeah, the whole thing sounds incredible. I mean, watching on TV and seeing it, kind of seeing, you know, on social media, some of the behind the scenes and stuff. I mean, the whole place just looks incredible. And what a brilliant idea by the UFC to create this. You know, and there's so much that sucks or that we don't like about COVID, but people being able to figure out a way, right? Find a way and then having the courage to do it. I mean, huge props to Dana White, the UFC, for jumping in and doing that and providing it.
Well, and that's how MMA has survived. Like, there was a time where it was going under. He saved it at one, you know, this is the second time that he saved MMA. So, props to the UFC and him. He's kept a lot of people employed, that's for sure, and myself included. So say what you want about him. I know my family and people here at my gym, we're all grateful.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. So give me some of your top success habits, things that you do maybe to stay in shape or eating or nutrition or sleep. Just what are the things that you do as a professional athlete that allow you to be successful?
Oh man, it's kind of changed over the years getting older now. It's not grinding so much. And now that it's paying off a little bit, I think it's investing in myself. I think that's the number one thing is investing myself. I used to be so scared to spend any money on anything nice for myself. I always like, especially cause I was poor my whole life. And now that I have a little bit of money in my bank account, like I get good meat. That's it. I get good vegetables, fresh vegetables. I pay more for that. I got a good bed. I bought myself a good brand new bed with a adjustable thing. And, I started putting money into myself because at the end of the day, I'm a company. And, if you have a great restaurant and you're serving good ass food, but people are coming in and everything's falling down and it smells like shit, you know, people aren't going to want to go in there. So like, you can't just have a good product. You also have to live the life. And if you want to live the life of a professional athlete, sometimes you have to spend some money on yourself. And, I don't waste money on clothes or shoes or watches or cars or anything like that. But I really, really quality food. I have a really, really quality bed. We just spare no expense in that way. My daughter's the same way. Like she'll eat anything. She loves to eat junk food if she gets it, but she also eats really, really good food because that's what we have around the house. But I think that's like the main thing that I really learned. And the thing that I changed the most was not being afraid to invest in yourself, sleeping, not going out and doing shit that you know is going to hurt you the next day, like investing in your nutrition and everything. And man, I spare no expense when it comes to that. I still dress and look poor, but I have, you know, really quality food and everything we eat is just really, really good. And my girlfriend was hard to get on board with that at first. She don't do anything nice for herself. She'll go buy all her clothes and shit at Goodwill and then complain that they don't fit right. Like, and my thing is like, you can literally go buy whatever you want. Just like be happy with, you know, like it's hard for her to get with that. And she's getting on the board now, like knowing if it's going to make you feel good and it's going to make my life easier. Like she knows I don't mind her spending a little bit of money. And I think that's our number one thing is like investing in ourselves. Like it's a business and putting the best stuff that you would put in your business into your body and feeling good and looking good and whatever way that is, like, don't be afraid to spend that little bit of money.
Yeah. I love that, man. I love that because it's tough. I mean, I grew up really poor as well. And so you have this poverty mindset. And like you said, you don't want to spend anything. And I don't know, it literally creates a mindset that holds you back. But if you look at and I like what you said, you are a business, you are your own brand. And if you look at the top leaders in the world, they literally, I mean, top businessmen in the world, they literally invest a ton into themselves on leadership, on becoming the best, on going to conferences, on hiring, you know, private and personal coaches. And
then James Crump, that guy. I mean, he really is. He goes and he learns from everybody.
Yes. So at the end of the day, it is, I believe this, man, when you have two athletes that are really equal, it's lifestyle versus lifestyle at that point. So the one with the better lifestyle is probably going to come out on top. I mean, you still got to possess heart and all those other things, but the best athletes have those things, right? That's why you've made it to the level that you're at. And
that was one of the reasons why I moved to Las Vegas to begin with. Whenever the PI was there, it was for the first time, I felt like a professional athlete. I would go up there. They would make my food for me. I would get a massage. I would get treatment. I would get therapy. I would sit in the sauna, the cryo chamber, the Novathor bed. And I felt like a professional athlete for the first time ever. And you can't get that anywhere else, not for free. I mean, you can pay for it and write it off in the end, but that was one of the allures of living in Las Vegas. It makes you feel like a professional athlete.
Yeah, you know, you and I both went through college programs that were just sort of prided themselves on the grind, and we didn't have anything special, which you can do for a while, I guess, when you're younger. But like you said, as you begin to age and get older, but it's amazing because then later on you meet, you know, athletes that went to these major D1 schools and they had all kinds of stuff, right? They were taken care of like professional athletes almost. But then you realize you don't maybe necessarily need all the stuff that they had at that age, but man, the better you're going to be. I mean, recovery and a lot of things you talked about are recovery. The quicker you recover, the harder you can train the next day, or the smarter you can train the next day. And then the better you off you're going to be when it's actual fight day.
Exactly.
All right. Well, as we get ready to close, I want to, what I call, put you on the hot seat, or since we're athletes, man, fast feet. All right. You gotta be quick on your feet here. So I'm going to give you three things and you can just choose one of them and expound upon it, or you can tell me a little bit about all three, but I want you to talk about either a highlight, a hardship, or a hero in your life. A highlight, hardship, or a hero. And then why does that stand out to you?
Man, I can hit you all three with one guy, Robert Fallis. He was a coach that I moved from Kansas City to Las Vegas for. And I had to leave a lot of good friends and leave my home to go to Las Vegas. But I went out there, I stayed for a few years. But right away when I went out there, I flew to Canada for a fight. He was supposed to meet me out there and he didn't show up. And James Krause flew out and we knew something was up. Turns out he ended up killing himself. So this guy that I moved and changed my whole life for to go train with had committed suicide. So it was he was one of my heroes at the time because of his coaching theory and shit. And then after he passed away and I fought again, I won a fight of the night and Krause was there. He asked me, he was like, "Hey man, I never asked you this." He was like, "But why did you leave?" And I told him, I said, "Man, when I asked you what you wanted as a coach, you said something, I couldn't remember exactly what it was, but it was something about money. And when I asked Robert Fallis what he wanted as a coach, he told me he wanted to coach a world champion. So that's why I moved to Las Vegas." And then James told me at that time, he said, "Well, that's what I want to do now." So that was one of the reasons why I moved back. But that was one of the best times of my life and where I really thought things were going good for me. And then he committed suicide and it ended up being a really hard time. But then I met my fiance through that. He was her coach as well. So ended up working out all right.
Yeah, it's amazing how in life sometimes we have these major adversities, but sometimes there are blessings that come along with those adversities at the same time. So, you know,
really
and let me ask you real quick, because I didn't, and you've brought her up a couple of times, but, you know, dating another, UFC fighter. So, you know, your fiance, she's the real deal as well. Is that dynamic? And like you said, sometimes it's hard for you being coach and fiance, but tell us a little bit about that dynamic.
It's easier now because James is like, he's the alpha, you know what I mean? Not just in the coaching, but at the gym, he's like, he's a dude everybody looks up to. So now I can kind of step back and be more of the boyfriend. I don't do the diet. She has a diet guy for that. So she can bitch at him for that. And then she can bitch at James for all the training stuff. And then I'm just kind of being able to be the boyfriend now, which is really good. But the other way around, it works out really good for me because she's in my corner. And for my diet, she makes all my food and she gives me all my supplements. It makes my life so much easier But for me, it's the transition is a little bit harder because I want to, you know, coach her like I would anybody else, but you can't do that with your significant other. But no, it works out really well. And again, she's a full-time fighter, so we both get to spend a lot of time with our daughter, and it works out really good.
Excellent. Well, Tim, man, I appreciate you taking the time to be on. I mean, I know you guys are busy and you're a family man, but, you know, I've really, I mean, for years and years now, just enjoy the kind of person you are. Love it when we do camps together, your work ethic, but you're also one of those dudes that, like, literally, if I needed a tire change at 2 a.m. on the middle of the highway somewhere in Kansas City, I could text you and you'd be like, all right. And you would just come out and help, right? Because you're just one for of those. Sure. Yeah, well, I appreciate it, brother. So, hey, where can we follow you or get a hold of you and see your career, social media and things like that?
Man, just hit me up on Instagram at @awkward_MMA. Thanks for having me, Coach. It was good talking with you.
Yeah. All right, y'all. This has been another episode of Coach P's Perspective with my man, Tim Elliott, who will have a fight announcement coming up soon so we can all watch him in the UFC.
Real soon. Thank you, guys.
Yep. All right. Till next time, may God bless you and shine his face upon you. Peace. Hey, before you go, I just want to tell you, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Coach P's Perspective. And then a couple things that I would ask. One is hit the subscribe button. That way, every single time a new episode comes out, man, as soon as you open up your podcast app, it is right there, ready to roll. You can listen to a new one. The second is, if you would, and we earned it, give us a 5-star review, a quick written review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts. That's great. You know, one of the ultimate goals is to grow this show and to positively impact as many people as possible, and that helps. And then lastly, jump over to lanefrostbrand.com. Visit my friends over there. You know, this is an incredible company, family-owned, operated, honoring the late, great Lane Frost, who is, you know, a former rodeo champion, was one of my idols growing up, and this is one of my absolute favorite companies. So if you need ball caps, T-shirts, all kinds of apparel, again, go over to lanefrostbrand.com and check them out. Thank you guys again. Much love and God bless.
Podcast complete. Now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins. Tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step. CSL rep. Pop, lock, and rock. Coach P, who never stops.